From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, and joining me on the panel this week are Katherine Gibson, VOA congressional correspondent, and Nancy Marshall Genzer, senior reporter for Marketplace. Welcome, Katherine and Nancy.
Hello.
Great to be here.
Well, here are the issues. A set of reforms aimed to protect voting rights suffered a significant setback by being defeated in Congress by Senate Republicans. Two other chances remain on voting reforms: the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which is proposed legislation that would restore and strengthen parts of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and a proposed compromise bill by West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin. President Biden announced a series of executive orders designed to reduce violent crimes and renew his call for Congress to adopt gun control legislation. Gun violence in major U.S. cities shows no signs of letting up, prompting the Biden administration into action and complicating efforts to pursue criminal justice reform. Vice President Kamala Harris is making her first visit to the U.S.-Mexico border as part of the Biden administration's diplomatic efforts to address the root causes of migration from El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. Officials in Ethiopia counted ballots after a parliamentary election billed as the first free vote in the country's history, but marred by an opposition boycott, war, and a humanitarian crisis. The White House acknowledged the U.S. would fall short of President Biden's July 4th COVID-19 vaccination goals, saying the country has more work to do to get younger Americans vaccinated. Well, those are the issues, and let's get started. Nancy, I'll start with you. The near 900-page For the People Act had represented a significant overhaul of voting and election law that the White House has described as a cause for President Biden. So what happens to this legislation at this point?
Well, it was stalled in the Senate by the filibuster rule, which says you need 60 votes to proceed to a vote on a bill. So the Republicans blocked it in the Senate. Now, major Democrats, including President Biden, have said, this isn't the end. We're going to keep trying. There is another bill in the works. It's called the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, but it's not clear that it would have any better of a chance in the Senate, although West Virginia Congressman Joe Manchin has said that he would support it. But Democrats say they're not giving up.
Katherine, what's your take on this?
From watching that For the People Act go through the U.S. House of Representatives, that was a signature piece of legislation for Pelosi's House Democrats. That's something that they had worked on for many, many months. And of course, it's a great failure to see that go over into what Pelosi always calls Mitch McConnell's, quote, legislative graveyard. So even though we now have Chuck Schumer in the Senate Majority Leader position, he, of course, still does not have the numbers to advance that bill to debate. And I think it really speaks to some frustration up on Capitol Hill, where, like the Police Reform Act that we tried to get through Congress last summer during the Black Lives Matter protest, there are moments where the U.S. Senate cannot even get these things forward to the floor for a debate, let alone a vote on the final piece of legislation. And that really speaks to some of the gridlock that's going on some of the bigger issues, even while there are deals being worked out on smaller pieces like the Juneteenth federal holiday, infrastructure, water rights, things like that. Some pieces of legislation are moving on, but those big issues of concern to the country, like this Voting Rights Act, are just not really going anywhere.
Republicans argue that the For the People Act would infringe on states' rights and that state measures are needed to stop fraud. Is this a legitimate concern? I'll throw that out to both of you.
It really depends who you talk to. And a number of Republican states have already moved ahead to exert more state control over things like local election boards. For example, in Georgia, Republicans there passed a law that gives legislature there more influence over a state board that regulates elections. And now that board can remove local election officials and has started removing some Democrats already.
Yeah, that's right. You know, having followed the development of the For the People Act over these past few years, I know that a lot of the Republican criticism also came from the fact that this bill was largely written by staffers. It was not written in consultation with election authorities. And so they would always point to that as a sign that this was a sign of federal overreach, that this was very much a DC-directed, top-down federal government approach to voting rights. And Republicans will tell you, well, of course I want everyone to have the right to vote, but I think we also need to look at how the federal government is moving into what the states and the local governments should be directing.
As you mentioned, Nancy, earlier, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, that's a proposed legislation that would restore and strengthen parts of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So is this an area that's going to really heavily be looked at going forward?
Well, Vice President Kamala Harris says it is. And of course, this bill is named after John Lewis, the Democratic congressman who died last year after representing Georgia's 5th District. This bill would help citizens challenge new voter laws in courts, especially if they could show that any new law infringed on minority voting rights. It would require public notice for any changes that were made to voting laws by states. And it would require that many categories of these changes go through a process known as preclearance, basically approval from the Justice Department, the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division.
And Catherine, West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin proposed a compromise bipartisan bill, as was mentioned before. So how does this fit in?
Well, you know, we heard from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi before that For the People Act failed in the U.S. Senate. She was asked, do you want to advance the John Lewis Voting Rights Act first? She said, of course, we want to get that bigger For the People Act through. Now that we know that that's not going to happen, I think we're first going to see Democrats move towards that John Lewis voting rights bill first. But knowing how the U.S. Congress works, we're eventually going to get to the point where we're going to be considering that bipartisan piece of legislation, because really, with the way that things are up on Capitol Hill right now, that's really our only chance. I also think that you have to figure in the congressional schedule, as always, into all of this. Remember that the White House is also hammering out a bipartisan deal on infrastructure, and we really only have a handful of weeks in session before Congress goes on that big summer break in August and part of September. When they come back, they also have a budget deal to work out to fund the entire federal government. So you have a lot of moving pieces where people have to make deals with each other, and it may be an issue of that voting rights piece of legislation, whatever it is, whether it's the bipartisan deal, whether it's the John Lewis Act, kind of falls to the wayside while these bigger issues are hammered out.
Yes, and President Biden announced new efforts to stem an increase in national violent crime rising as administration officials brace for what could be a turbulent summer. His plan focuses on addressing gun violence, providing money to cities that need more police, and offering community support. Nancy, do you see this issue of violent crime as being something the administration is being forced to address, though it may not have been a top priority for them?
Yeah, some of the more moderate Democrats are very concerned about violent crime rising in cities across the country. Voters tend to react to that in the ballot booth, and they know that. So President Biden has said that cities and municipalities can use some of their COVID relief money to hire more police officers. He's also said that Congress should pass legislation that would close loopholes and background checks for when people go to buy weapons.
And Catherine and I have talked to some people who say guns are not the issue. Instead, leaders should get to the root cause of the violence, such as unemployment, drugs, gangs, and even the calls for defunding the police. So what is Congress saying about this?
Right. This really gets to the heart of the debate on Capitol Hill about what the underlying reasons are for this spike in crime. I think it's important to put into context that rates of violent crime have been rising since 2015. And we also saw a spike in homicides and shootings starting last summer when some of the COVID-19 pandemic restrictions were being lifted in some parts of the country. So some experts are saying and talking to members of Congress and telling them that a lot of this may be in large part to the upheavals caused by the pandemic, the protests. That's what Republicans up on Capitol Hill are saying, that it's related to the Black Lives Matter protests that began after George Floyd's death last summer. They're saying that, you know, that's a softening of criminal justice laws. Democrats are also pointing to the fact that there's a lot of guns on American streets, and they're saying that there needs to be more laws cracking down on that. So this really gets to the debate that's been going on in the U.S. Congress for years now over racial justice, over policing, over gun control, kind of feeds into those larger debates that U.S. lawmakers, frankly, have had a hard time resolving through legislation.
Absolutely. It has been a battle with combating crime and overhauling the police. It seems like they are at odds with each other, and really when they don't have to be. And Biden also is encouraging cities to invest some of their COVID-19 relief funds into policing and pushing alternative crime reduction steps, such as increased community support and summer jobs for teenagers. So if cities listen to the White House, it could make an impact, but this is all voluntary. So your thoughts, Nancy, on this strategy?
It's true that President Biden has said the COVID money could be used for summer programs for at-risk youth, also for organizations that try to intervene and help young people. But he also said, you know, there could be stricter enforcement of the background checks that are already in place. And he said he had a message for owners of gun shops that don't do background checks. He said, we'll find you and we will seek your license to sell guns. We'll make sure, you know, you can no longer sell guns. So it seems to be a combination of a tougher approach for enforcing the gun control laws that we already have, plans to try to pass stricter laws, and then also money for things like summer jobs programs for youth that might be at risk of perhaps joining gangs.
Catherine, if you had any more comment on that issue.
Well, I think it goes to some of the Republican criticism that there were too much COVID relief funds going to state and local governments. That was part of the battle over COVID-19 funding last year. And now the Biden administration is saying, look, some of these funds can be redirected, which is always an issue with government funding, is that you can kind of move and shift things around. And so he's trying to address this issue in a way that really maybe is not solvable, because there's, we know, so many underlying issues related to rises in violent crime. You're not going to always be able to address the underlying societal issues. So this is one way that the federal government can address this issue.
Well, Nancy, Vice President Kamala Harris, who visited Guatemala and Mexico earlier this month as part of her first foreign visit in office, is now visiting the U.S.-Mexico border in person. This comes after being heavily criticized for not going during her first foreign visit. So what does the vice president hope to accomplish on her trip to the border?
Well, I think a lot of it is in response to the criticism that she wasn't visiting the border. The Biden administration's philosophy has been they're going to try to prevent people from coming to the U.S. by making conditions in their home countries better. Kamala Harris went to Mexico and Guatemala earlier this month. As you said, she met with local officials there and told people basically not to go across Mexico into the United States. The philosophy is similar to the Obama administration's philosophy, which was put money into education programs at, you know, mitigating violence and gang involvement, and just try to stop people from coming to the U.S. in the first place. But President Trump is going to be visiting the U.S.-Mexico border soon, and so it appears the Biden administration kind of wanted to get out ahead of that.
And in light of this, Catherine, do you see people coming from these countries, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, that they're coming because they are getting more of a welcoming tone from Democrats as a sign that President Biden is inviting them to cross the border, including these thousands of unescorted children?
Well, I think that would certainly be congressional Republicans' argument for the rise in crossings at the U.S. border. They would say that, you know, look, when Biden was on the campaign trail, he talked about legalizing some of the 11 to 12 million undocumented immigrants who are already in this country. So in a sense, they're conflating these two groups of undocumented immigrants who are already in the U.S. and the undocumented immigrants who are looking to cross the U.S. border. Now, the Biden administration has been very clear in saying, do not come here, we will turn you away. And it's also striking that I've covered Capitol Hill for 6 years now, and this immigration issue always has a way of popping up. We've come close in many, many times during the Trump administration when President Trump turned down a deal for funding for his U.S. border wall in return for some immigration reforms. It's really striking that we're not really talking about any immigration legislation right now. That's due in some part to the fact that we have so many other issues up for grabs on Capitol Hill, like I've mentioned, infrastructure, the issues with gun control and crime and other deals that need to be worked out on the budget. But really, I've been struck by the fact that we're really not talking about any legislative solution to this border crisis. And it's really up to Kamala Harris and what she's going to be doing in terms of the underlying issues at the border to try and fix some of this.
That is very interesting, and we'll have to continue to follow this and see what lies ahead in terms of trying to really get a handle on this overwhelming problem that has really been going on for many years. Time now for a quick break, and when we come back, we'll look at the recent parliamentary election in Ethiopia. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panelists who are joining me via Skype. Katherine Gibson, VOA Congressional Correspondent, and Nancy Marshall Genzer, Senior Reporter for Marketplace. Now over to Ethiopia, where an election for parliament took place with a war and a humanitarian crisis going on. Why are these elections important for Ethiopia, and will they have any effect on the fighting that has been going on for months now between the federal government in Addis and factions of the TPLF in Tigray province?
Well, I think this was a way for the Prime Minister of Ethiopia to try to validate his declarations of democracy. And, you know, of course, he won the Nobel Peace Prize shortly after he was elected. But violence has broken out across the country. And in many areas of the country, people aren't even voting. The State Department has criticized the elections and actually said they were flawed elections and, you know, urged dialogue and an end to the violence. So it's definitely not a free and fair election as far as the State Department is concerned.
And in looking at this, and as you mentioned with the Prime Minister, he did win the Nobel Peace Prize a few years ago, but he has been under criticism for this current war taking place. And human rights organizations say actors on both sides of the conflict have been behind abuses against civilians. So how does this election, does it shift the focus from his handling of the war to elections? I throw that out to both of you.
Well, I would say certainly from the view of many U.S. lawmakers, the concerns about the election, while they are very deep and people on both sides of the aisle, both Democrats and Republicans, express concern about the way these elections were handled, this has not stopped concern about some of the human rights abuses, really the widespread that have been going on there. You know, we just saw that airstrike in Tigray that killed at least 50 people, we're hearing. There's widespread famine. And what's striking to me is that there really isn't any sense of what the U.S. can do in a long-term fashion about this issue. And in talking to U.S. lawmakers, there is a sense of frustration about what we can do to handle this crisis and send more aid to that region.
government supporters and Addis, they're criticizing the U.S., saying it's showing too much support for the anti-government fighters, the TDF force in Tigray. So are these critics, are they correct?
Well, the other day, Ned Price, the State Department spokesman, said, you know, we stand ready to assist all Ethiopians toward, you know, working toward a peaceful, secure future for the country, and saying that everybody has to be part of a broad political process involving compromise. But at the same time, the State Department, you know, said it strongly condemned that airstrike in Tigray, said it was absolutely unacceptable and wants an independent investigation of that. I think the U.S. government is walking kind of a fine line here between trying to be supportive but also trying to stop this violence.
And let's get in our final topic. The White House says that the country would miss both of the president's goals of having 70% of adult Americans with at least one COVID-19 vaccine shot and 160 million Americans fully vaccinated by July 4th. Catherine, is this a big disappointment for Biden? And what is the new timeline?
Well, certainly the White House was trying to spin this as not as huge a disappointment as it could have been, noting that in terms of people in the United States over the age of 30, they had reached that 70% vaccination level. And now it was really a matter of reaching out to younger people and telling them, look, you may not think that COVID-19 is a big deal for you, that either you can't get it or that you can't be impacted by it. But the fact that you're getting vaccinated is a good thing for all. And they're really developing some programs that will reach out to those young adults, the 18 to roughly 26 age demographic, and letting them know, look, this is something that you can do for everyone in society. They're saying that with those outreach efforts, they do expect to reach that 70% vaccination level by about mid-July. So really, when you look at it, they're only overshooting that mark by just a couple of weeks.
Yes, and you brought up some really good points about the Biden administration reaching out to them through programs, which really brings me to my next question. Nancy, they are focusing on younger adults to get them vaccinated, but a lot of them are saying they just don't need the vaccine. So how do you think this is going to work to get those 30 and older to get vaccinated?
It is going to be a challenge because if they've already had COVID-19 and gotten over it, they feel like they've got immunity from that. And just the other day, Dr. Anthony Fauci said, we really have to watch it because if people, especially under the age of 30, aren't getting vaccinated, we could see cases of this Delta variant rise, which is a lot more contagious than the original COVID virus that we saw in the U.S. And in fact, cases among people age 30 and younger are rising rapidly and they're being hospitalized. And Fauci said, if we're not careful, this Delta variant could morph into a form of the virus that would be resistant to the vaccines.
Catherine, how concerned is the White House about this Delta variant?
This is certainly an issue that came up in some of the latest White House COVID response team briefings. They were really emphasizing that it's not only a matter of getting young adults vaccinated, there are also some other key demographics in the United States that officials are focusing on and really encouraging people in those groups to get vaccinated. And those are communities of color who may not have access to vaccinations, people who work 2 to 3 jobs who would need to take public transport to get a vaccine. Officials are really looking at ways to expand out and say, look, there are more hours to get vaccines. There are more locations. You don't have to make an appointment anymore. And we are seeing some encouraging statistics in terms of communities of color getting vaccinated. Another key demographic is American evangelicals. We know that evangelical Christians, about half of them say that they are not going to get vaccinated. And as was noted in a congressional hearing on this issue earlier this week, that actually has a really important global impact. If American evangelicals are saying that they're not getting vaccinated, that has repercussions in Africa and China, where evangelical Christianity is very important as well. So getting America vaccinated and up to speed on this will also have a worldwide impact on getting everybody back to normal after the pandemic.
And we're going to have to wrap up the show on that note. Thanks to VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson and Nancy Marshall Genzer, senior correspondent for Marketplace. I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for joining us for Issues in the News.